Fasten your chin strap and get ready for the snap. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is ready to go. Sports Animals VFL QB is ready to give you the insight and analysis that no one else in Tennessee radio can. Get in Eric's headset by calling 656-9900. 656-9900. The Eric Ainge Show with Brian Rice is headed your way right now.
It's the final hour of the Eric Ainge Show. We welcome you in. Brian Rice, joined by Eric Kane. EA has had to dip out for a little allergic reaction on the poison ivy for his son. Kaner, you got a photo, and I didn't ask you to share it, but he'll be back with us tomorrow because they are wishing speedy recovery to Turner on that one.
Not great. Not great.
If you get poison ivy, do not rub your eyes. Just a public service announcement. Coming up this hour, though, we'll play Over Under. ESPNU will have a new Johnny Majors documentary. That's coming up this Friday, and that should be a whole lot of fun. And is the NBA actually going to resume? Adam Silver's comments yesterday have everybody feeling a little less optimistic than they did before. But right now, we play Over Under, and that's brought to you by H3 Sports and Avalon Golf. AvalonGolf.com is where you find out more about Avalon and everything they have, from the T-Prime Steakhouse that has incredible food on the weekends, as well as the grill. Those are open to the public, and right now they have memberships that you can explore right now. AvalonGolf.com. All right, let's tee up some over-under. Sam Foreman's going to join us for over-under as well. Sam, good to have you along. You're not getting paid extra for over-under, just so you know.
I expected as much.
Welcome to the world of radio.
Yep.
All right, this is an all-Tennessee stats edition. We're going to look at what Tennessee did last year. Will it be better or worse this coming year? To a certain extent. Well, we'll have a couple extra numbers in there. All right, the first one. Ty Chandler was Tennessee's leading rusher in 2019 with 655 yards. Over under 700 yards for Tennessee's leading rusher this year. As you're the guest, Sam, you can go first.
So we're talking for leading rusher here.
Leading rusher, over or under 700.
Even though I think things will be more equally split between Eric Gray and Ty Chandler this year, and I think they'll both see more receiving yards out of the backfield, I'm going to go over because I'm banking on Trey Smith still being able to play despite being, I'm sure, higher risk of coronavirus. Cade Mays getting his waiver. I think the offensive line is going to be able to allow you to do what you did against Mississippi State far more often, so I'll go over for the leading rusher having at least 700.
Kaner?
Yeah, I'm wanting to lean under here because Tennessee the last couple of years, dating back to Jalen Hurd, has been a running back shared by committee, and so typically you don't have one guy that just jumps out further than the rest. And I still do believe it's going to be Eric Gray and Ty Chandler. They'll both get a lot of run, but I do think that whichever one leads the team, my opinion would be probably Eric Gray is going to get over that threshold of 700 this year. Sam pointed out behind that offensive line, I think finally it's going to come together and Tennessee's going to have not just an okay run game, but a good run game, a solid, respectable run game in the SEC. So I will take the over on this.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over. I'm like Sam, I want to go under because I do think there will be a lot of splitting of carries, particularly with Gray and Chandler. But if one of those guys seizes the job, or if one of those guys has a hot hand for some or all of the game, I can see either one of them hitting that number. And, hey, maybe Tennessee will have both of them hit that number, 700. That means the Vols will be very, very good this year. All right, number two. Tennessee's quarterbacks last year combined to throw for 19 touchdowns. Over under 19.5 for the season total for the quarterback that starts the first game. So this is assuming one guy takes the job, whoever starts the first game, over under 19.5 touchdown passes this year.
I am going to lean under because while I think Jarrett is capable of doing that, and I think he's at times proven that, and I think he will turn a corner this year personally, I'm going to take under, not so much because of who the quarterback will be who starts game one in their abilities or their ability to hold on to the job, but I have so many questions about who replaces Juwan Jennings, who replaces Marquez Callaway. Can Palmer be a number one wide receiver in the SEC? We know he can be a number three and a slash two guy in the SEC. Can he be a number one? Who steps up behind him? What does tight end look like? I'm going to go under because of the weapons that they'll be throwing to more so than the quarterback's ability.
And again, these are all based on if you have you're playing a full season, obviously.
Right. We are assuming a full 12-game regular season schedule here.
Yeah. I mean, Brian, I may be off here and talk me down if I am. But I mean, 20 touchdown passes should not be that difficult. Jerry Garantano, he went from 4, starting just a couple games as a redshirt freshman, to 12 to 16 touchdown passes this past year, playing in 13 games, but, you know, hit or miss in terms of starts and really inconsistent play. And I know you had Callaway, I know you had Jennings, and to Sam's point, you don't have those two gentlemen this year, but I'm going to take the over. I really do feel like a fifth-year senior who I expect to get the bulk of the playing time at quarterback this year will take another step, will improve on his 16 touchdown passes last year, and will get at least 20 this year. I'll take the over.
I will take the over, but I don't feel great about it. He has not shown an ability to stay healthy for all the games. Now, the offensive line is going to help that. And if he struggles, and we hope that he doesn't, because Tennessee's easiest path to success this year is for Jarrett Garantano to have a great season and to lead the way. But if he struggles, I don't think he has a very long leash. So because of that, I will take the over, but I don't feel great about it. Number three, Juwan Jennings led Tennessee with 8 receiving touchdowns last year. I'll back off of it a little. Over under 7.5 for Tennessee's leading touchdown catcher this year.
Said 7.5?
7.5.
I know what I just said as to why I was going under with the quarterback, because I question the targets that they'll have to throw to. I think receptions for Ty Chandler and for Eric Gray could be up. And Josh Palmer, I really think, is your only proven talent at wide receiver. We'll see if Brandon Johnson can return to the form he had a couple of years ago. I'm going to go over on this one because I think you're going to have a main target down deep, and that's who you're going to toss a lot of balls to. So I'll go over for that one.
Yeah, I'll take the under, and I think this is probably the easiest one. I do think that Tennessee's starting quarterback will have over 20 passes. Like you, Brian, I don't think it'll be much more than that, but I think 20 is that threshold that honestly should get to just about every year if you're a full-time starter. But, you know, you don't have Jennings, you don't have Callaway, get all that, but you have Josh Palmer, you have Brandon Johnson, two guys who you know what you got in those guys. What can you get from D'Angelo Gibbs? What can you get from Velus Jones Jr.? Cedric Tillman, you kind of know what you have so far. What about these freshmen? Jalen Hyatt? What about D. Beckwith? What about Callaway? There's a number of guys. There's going to be a number of options. And so I think that if you kind of sprinkle it out amongst all of them without one of them stepping up into that Jennings-type role in terms of being the most productive guy, I think you can still get to that total. So I will take the under 7.5 touchdowns for Tennessee's leading receiver.
Yeah, I'll take the under as well. I think what you said, there's so much uncertainty. I could see Josh Palmer stepping up and being the guy and taking those receptions and being the target down low. I can also see them spreading the ball around enough that I'm going to take the under, but I'll leave the caveat. It is possible that Palmer takes that step forward and becomes that big TD guy. All right. Last year, Tennessee averaged, this is number 4, averaged 24.2 points per game. It's not a great total, so I'll set the over-under a little higher, over-under 28 points per game this season.
I will go over because the offensive line is improved. I think that will give Jarrett or whoever may be playing at quarterback, because, Brian, I agree with you, I think he will have a short leash if he is struggling. And he has not shown an ability to stay healthy throughout an entire season. So whether it's Jarrett, whether it's Brian Maurer, whether it's whoever else at quarterback, I think the offensive line will help keep them healthier and upright. I think you're going to be able to spread the ball around, and I really like what the running backs could do beyond even Gray and Chandler. So I'll go over. They'll be a little bit more explosive as far as putting points on the board this year offensively.
Tanner?
Yeah, I changed my mind. I said last question was the easiest. This one's the easiest for me. I'm going to take the under. You're talking about averaging 4 touchdowns a game with question marks at quarterback, big question marks at wide receiver, against SEC defenses week in and week out. And I know you'll have a couple of blowout wins, as you always do. But, you know, Tennessee improved from 21 points per game in 2018 to 24 in 2019. If you can prove to, you know, 25, 26, 27, you know, a point and a half, 2 points, that's improvement. But I don't think Tennessee is going to average 4 touchdowns a game. So I'll take the under.
I hate to do it, but I'm going to take the under. Tennessee's only averaged 28 points per game or more 3 times in the last decade.
Yeah.
2012, 2015, 2016. 12 and 16 were the two highest production offenses in school history. I'm going to, and both of those offenses, by the way, hit 28 by, and then some. It was, one was 35 and one was 38, if I'm remembering offhand.
That is a lot of points.
It's a lot of points.
Golly.
So I'm going to take the under. I think they'll be improved. I don't know that they'll be improved enough to get over 28. Last one, wins. Regular season wins, assuming a 12-game schedule, I'm going to set the over-under at 8, which means none of us can take 8, which is the most likely win total we've seen out there. So you're saying over-under. It's 7 or less, or it's 9 or more. Over-under 8 on Tennessee regular season victory. Sam?
Oh, this is... Well, Kenner, this is by far the hardest one, at least in my opinion, because of how Brian set this up.
I agree.
See, it's so much more enjoyable when you're listening on the radio, and Brian does this to you or Joel and Ainge.
Just wait till people find you on Twitter and harass you. Brian, I'll go first, man. When you put it like that, sorry, I hate to be a Debbie Downer, but I'll take the under. I think Tennessee's more likely to lose a game it shouldn't at this point than to win a game it shouldn't, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't want to be a Debbie Downer, but because I am so convinced 8 is that number.
I am too. I think it's 8.
If that's not an option, I have to go under, because for the same exact reason, I can make just as strong of a case in my mind for Tennessee to either something happens, the bad luck continues in Columbia, or Kentucky somehow gets Tennessee, then Tennessee getting one of those 4 games of the Big 4. I can see that happening just as easily, so I got to go under in that scenario.
All right, well, then let me be the optimist for once, because normally I'm the downer.
All right, Brian, there you go.
I think when I look at the rest of Tennessee's schedule, I see there being a fairly wide gap between Tennessee and South Carolina and Missouri and Kentucky and Vanderbilt and certainly Arkansas. I don't think any of those teams that Tennessee should beat are capable of beating Tennessee this year. Now, I could be proven wrong by that, and I certainly hope I'm not, but I don't see that. So I think it's more likely that Tennessee gets a win over one of the Big 4 than it is they take a loss against one of the other 8. So I will take the over, but I'm like you, it's tough. But if I have to pick which one's more likely, I'm gonna take the over and say, yeah, Tennessee's gonna get 9. I wish I sounded a little more confident on that. That's though how you play over under. It's brought to you each Wednesday on the Eric Haines Show by H3 Sports and Avalon Country Club. Restart your spring now at Avalon Country Club. They have the pool, they have the tee prime, they have the grill. So much fun to be had on a great golf course out at Avalon Country Club. Start living the Avalon life right now. Give them a call, 389-5998, or you can check out the website, avalongolf.com. The Eric Haines Show continues next. At live, so they're trying to work out what they're going to do with high school sports this fall. If you missed it earlier, they have been indefinitely suspended because, in football and girls soccer at least, because of Governor Lee's extension of the state of emergency order through the end of August, which means that high school football games and practices that were supposed to start in early August will not. So they're going to make an adjustment on what they can do with the schedule. They're considering several options. I was told that there is no firm decision expected out of today's meeting, but they are discussing the options, which could include flipping fall and spring seasons. I know a lot don't want to do that, but it is a possibility. They're just trying to do whatever they can to try and get as many athletes the ability to play as many sports as possible this school year. This school year, unfortunately, it seems is not going to be normal. So they're in the situation where they have to do something. What are they going to do? That's the question as they go forward, and that's what they're trying to go through right now with the TSSAA. Speaking of resumptions, the NHL is prepared to announce today that unless there's some sort of last-minute change, the hub cities for the NHL will not be in the United States. They will be in Canada. Edmonton and Toronto are set to be the NHL hub cities. Trying to see that the bubble could be the most secure in those two cities. Las Vegas was a possibility. They only have a couple of NHL-quality ice surfaces. One's at T-Mobile Arena, and with Las Vegas reopening, it's not as natural to keep them in a controlled environment there. So they're looking right now, according to Bob McKenzie of TSN Canada, that Edmonton and Toronto are likely to be announced as the two hub cities. Vancouver and Las Vegas were the other two finalists. Both of those have had some recent issues that have caused them to drop out, so to speak. Adam Silver yesterday with the NBA said they plan on going full speed ahead, but as players and staff members have tested positive at some of the training camp sites that individual teams have put up, it has meant that it's not exactly a certainty that we're going to see the NHL either, or excuse me, the NBA either.
He said the plans are still in motion, but obviously if the virus spikes and the positive test spikes, then you might see a halt in what's going to happen. But, you know, NBA is still set for July the baseball's 23rd, 24th, and NBA July 29th, 30th, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then the NHL, I feel like the NHL came out a long time ago and said, here's our plan. And then we have not heard from the NHL since until today.
No, it was, we're going to try to find where our hub cities are. You guys do your small group workouts at your team facilities, and we'll see you at the resumption. So that's been a thing. Jesse from 5starpreps.com, by the way, reports one of the things that they don't want to recommend today is flipping the fall and spring sports seasons. Lack of preparation time for the spring sports being moved to the fall, and then the something else that we've talked about in football, you know, when it was discussed for colleges, and it's still out there as a possibility for colleges. If you have a spring football season and then you have another fall football season next year, that's a lot of high contact football for athletes to absorb over one calendar year.
Not really is. I mean, you're talking about an off season of what, 2.5 months, you know, before you have to start getting ready to. And I mean, from a strength and conditioning standpoint, I can't even imagine how difficult that would be to manage. As we all know, football is a sport to where you need to have an off season. You need to have a couple of months to let your body rest and recoup and then start strengthening your body for the next football season. So especially at that age too, we're talking about amateur athletes, prep athletes, you know, ages 14 to 17, 14 to 18. It just would not be the best idea in the world. Plus, I already didn't like that proposal anyway, because you're forcing kids to have to choose between baseball, track and field, baseball, and maybe even basketball, if that's the case going on right there as well. And that would significantly hurt the smaller schools, you know, in the area that we can think of, the 1As, the 2As, some even 3As, where they depend on, you know, football players because it's got the biggest roster to play other sports. And so for a number of reasons, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, so it does not appear that that's going to be a option that's at least on the table for them right now, though some around the state have suggested it. Have you seen what the SEC Network is doing right now?
No.
It started Monday, and I just picked up on it today, but for the next now 12 days, including today, they are replaying an entire day of the college football season from this past year. Today is the third day of it, so today is week three. They're starting with SEC Nation at 10 o'clock. They're running the full SEC Nation from that day, and then they're going to play four football games over the rest of the day. It's a pretty cool thing they're doing, one at 12, one at 3, one at 6, and one at 9. Tennessee's going to appear a couple of times. The Mississippi State game will come up in a couple of weeks or in a couple of days, and unfortunately the Georgia game's in there as well. But there will be
it's good first half.
Yeah, yeah. So I just think it's really cool that they're, you know, they've been taking some different approaches to programming. They had the school takeover days pretty early on. From what I understand, they'll have school takeover days coming up again here pretty soon. But they're running through the whole football season from this past year, starting with the full two-hour SEC Nation at 10 o'clock and rolling all the way through midnight with games. It's kind of fun to see everything in context. So that's how they have chosen to move forward right now through this section of the summer. And we'll see. We are desperately hoping the college football starts on time, because even if all these other sports are able to get some semblance of normalcy back, we need football. We need to find a way. And if you missed it earlier, Jeremy Pruitt joined the Dan Patrick Show this morning and said that Tennessee is still at zero positive cases for COVID-19. They are concerned about guys going out this weekend for the 4th of July weekend. They're going to test them all when they return, but they are hoping that they will continue to be responsible. And it helps that the infection rate here in Knox County has been low and continues to be low at this point, so players aren't in as much jeopardy here locally as they are in some areas. I think the real concern will be what happens when every student comes back to school, because I know that's a big concern of the Knox County Health Department, is when you bring in people from all different corners of the country and put them all together, they're all bringing some sort of illness with them typically, whether it's colds, flus, whatever. Adding COVID-19 to that is something that I know they're worried about coming up here in a few weeks. But right now, Tennessee football, still zero positives. There have been two positive cases with Tennessee men's basketball. Of course, the exact players have not been identified, but hopefully everything is recovering and getting better on those fronts. But still zero for Tennessee football.
That is a good, good thing.
Yes.
And again, I said it earlier, I'll say it again. Credit to the players for being smart. Credit to Tennessee's coaching staff and medical staff and personnel and everyone involved, because obviously, and I'm knocking on wood right now, obviously whatever the procedures are for when student-athletes are on campus, it's working right now. And so, it's up to the game plan for when these players, when they go home, which, again, go home, see families. You have every right to just be smart about it.
656-9900, if you want to join us when we return on the other side, go through a few more names on our best or favorite Tennessee football players of the last decade list from the 10 o'clock hour. We'll get into that and more as we come back on the Eric Ainge Show.
The great thing about sports is it never stops. Here's another 60-second sports minute on the Sports Animal.
High school football in Tennessee will not start on time this year. TSSAA Executive Director Bernard Childress confirmed that news on Tuesday afternoon. This comes following Tennessee Governor Bill Lee's extension of the state of emergency on Monday, and it goes through August the 29th. High school girls soccer will also not start on time, whereas there was no mention of volleyball, golf, cross country, or other non-contact fall sports in a memo that was sent out to member schools. Tennessee Football Coaches Association is holding an already scheduled meeting with the Board of Control that took place about 30 minutes ago this morning. For the first time in 64 years, no minor league baseball will happen in East Tennessee. No Tennessee Smokies, no Chattanooga Lookouts, or Appalachian League baseball. That announcement was made yesterday, or confirmed yesterday. Some minor league players will be able to go and play some independent league baseball as well. With the Midday Sports Minute, I'm Eric Kane.
Welcome back in to the EA Show. Our topic a little earlier was your favorite players of the 2010s in Tennessee football. And the reason that's the topic, tomorrow on the show during the 10 o'clock hour, Ainge, Kaner, and myself are going to have a fantasy draft to draft our rosters of the best of the 2010s. And then I'll post each of our offenses on Twitter, and we'll be able to let you all vote on who has the best roster. And then on Friday, we'll do the same thing for the defenses.
Serious question.
Yes.
How do we determine who gets the first pick? I would assume if Eric was here, he'd say, well, it's my show, I get the first pick. But how are we
Eric yesterday said, and I can pull the audio, he'll pick third.
Okay. Well, that's great news.
So you and I can flip a coin. We can FaceTime or whatever to see who it, to make sure that the other does it.
What are you saying here?
We'll figure, I trust you, you trust me, but how much do we trust that when it comes to a draft pick?
That's fair.
And we'll go traditional draft. We're not going to go snake draft since there's only three of us.
Okay. Awesome.
But it'll be a fantasy football style. I've given you the list of draft eligible players, and still, over the last 10 years, there have been a lot of good football players that have come through the University of Tennessee, and then there have been some that have played a long time because there weren't other guys that came along at those positions.
And like the offensive line, where there is many, but yes, as we referred to earlier, when we pick, we're just going to pick five offensive line. We don't necessarily have to, say this is my center, this is my right guard.
Okay. Right. Yeah. It's just going to be straight up.
Cool.
Five offensive linemen. So
cool.
Breaking down because I did a fantasy draft with three other people in the softball community. We were drafting the best SEC players of the last 10 years. And it was tough because a lot of middle infielders had played two or three different positions over their careers. And you had some players that had been outfielders for 2 years and infielders for 2 years. And so we set their position. So I did that for a couple of players on the defensive side of the ball they played some safety and some linebacker, some safety and some corner. So that's why the list, and it's not just free association, but we'll do that. So I asked earlier for you all, both on the air and through Twitter, your favorite players of the 2010s. Some more responses since earlier. Orville says, no hesitation, Juwan Jennings, what a turnaround story. Jake says, Derek Barnett, JT, Josh Dobbs, without a doubt. CR says, Vaughn Pearson, as he was, I think he was greatly underrated in his couple of years here for what he brought on the field. Tyler says Cordell Patterson. Amanda Watson, former producer of this very radio program, says obviously Juwan Jennings. He's one of her favorites. Eric says too legit to quit, and AJ Dino Johnson. They were quite the duo when they were together. And Keith gave me an entire top five, and it's actually six because he has 1A and 1B, Josh Dobbs and Juwan Jennings. His number two, somebody that we mentioned earlier that has a mixed history with Tennessee fans, and that's Jalen Hurd.
Yeah.
Derek Barnett, three. Cordell Patterson, four. And Alvin Kamara, five. The legacy of Jalen Hurd is so complicated because it ended so badly. But when he was here and when he was at his peak, he was really, really tough to beat.
I mean, you're looking at him in 2.5 seasons. We're talking about Hurd, right?
Yes.
Yeah, two and a half seasons, he was, 400 yards away from being the all-time, 600 yards away from being the all-time leading rusher here at Tennessee. And think about all the running backs who have come through this program. Yeah. He was playing in an offense that wasn't even suited necessarily to the best of his skill set, but he was still getting it done. I mean, he was a hard-nosed downhill runner. And he ran hard. And, I mean, I think, players who play hard will gain the respect not only of other players and coaches, but the fans see that. I mean, fans, we know when someone's playing hard and running hard and giving everything they had. And that's how Jalen Hurd was. And he was really good. Will and I, during the beginning of this furlough process, it was me and him 1 week, and we tossed around a segment for a couple of weeks on the starting lineup called Fight the Room. You'll give an unpopular opinion, and you will debate it. You will debate your stance on it till the end of time, which you are in the vast minority of it. And my leading topic for that segment was Butch Jones was correct in starting and playing Jalen Hurd over Alvin Kamara. Albeit, should have found a way to use Kamara more, and I think we all realize that. But Jalen Hurd was Jalen Hurd was a guy. He was a beast, man. He was an absolute beast.
Yeah, and continues to be a beast at the next level. And Jalen Hurd, at wide receiver for the 49ers, is going to be a key part of their offense this year. And with some injuries, he's going to have a chance to be the slot guy.
Well, you hope that he stays healthy as well, because he's had many injuries. And there was some chatter earlier in the offseason that he might be, you know, dealing with a serious injury as well. But looked like he was working out with Juwan Jennings and Jimmy Garoppolo in the mid-state a couple weeks ago. So
We do have to give a shout-out to Turner Ainge. He took my advice and got the shot, so he will feel better from the poison ivy very soon.
Attaboy.
Good job, buddy. Sometimes you learn, and I learned it the hard way. If you take the pills instead, you'll feel better for a day, and then 2 days later you have to go back and get the shot anyway. You get it done. Hope you're feeling better, and look forward to EA rejoining us on here tomorrow. We'll come back. We'll find out what we learned today, and get you set for your sports afternoon next on the Eric Ainge Show. And they are going to talk those out today and then make a decision a little later down the road. But all of them assume that the governor's order does expire as it's scheduled to at the end of August, and hope that they can go from there. There's not really, based on the four options I saw presented, just reading through them on Twitter during the break here, none of them have a really good option for what happens if that order doesn't expire at the end of August. And I think that's got to be the concern for decision makers at all levels of sports. Something else we didn't talk about earlier, Kaner, the Ivy League earlier this morning announced that they are going to announce their plans for fall sports on July 8th. The Ivy League is a Division I league. We've talked about some Division III schools calling off fall sports. The Ivy League, which was the first league to declare their spring sports over, is going to make a decision on July 8th, and they are going to hold their schools to it for the fall. But they're going to go ahead and do it on July 8th and go with whatever that plan is, whatever that announcement is, but they're making it good and early.
Yeah, and that's a week from today. And so that's going to be good and early, like you said. And it's something I was talking to Will about earlier this morning. When we're talking about coronavirus, when we're talking about sports, the possibilities of Tennessee football, college football, we've always kind of asked, you know, when's that panic meter going to hit, you know, in terms of by this date, I better know something. I better be in firm standing. And if it's not, then that's when I'll panic. A lot of those dates that we tossed around in the morning show a couple months ago was July the 1st. Here we are. It's July the 1st. And there's plans in place, but the way things are trending right now, certainly you don't feel like you're on solid standing.
Yeah, that's...
So that's not great.
It's going to be tough, and everybody's going to have to make adjustments, and, you know, we just hope that we can get sports in. And in the grand scheme of the world, sports aren't as important, but they employ a lot of people, and they are the primary form of enjoyment for a lot of others. And so, you know, I see the responses, well, why are we worrying about sports so much? Because they fill big roles in both economies and in the lives of people. Let's roll in and find out what we learned today. And that's brought to you every day by Regenerative Complete. RegenComplete.com in Farragut. They have testosterone tests for men. You can book right online. And hormone replacement therapy for both men and women. If you're not feeling your best, check them out, regencomplete.com. They also have antibody testing. If you think you had COVID-19 and you want the antibody test to be sure, they do that as well as a variety of orthopedic solutions for you to hopefully help you avoid surgery. regencomplete.com. Kaner, what did you learn this morning?
Well, as we pointed out, as I'm literally reading these options right now about the options that are coming from that Board of Control meeting for Tennessee high school football, as you just pointed out a moment ago, there's a lot of options. They'll go back to the schools, to the districts, and they'll kind of talk it over. But, you know, there are some that you feel pretty good about, and we'll talk more about on Sports 180, Heather and I will, but some aren't so great. And so we're kind of learning, we're kind of getting more information on what the fall will look like for high school football. And again, this is from that Board of Control meeting that wrapped up just a couple of moments ago, but we're learning more about high school football. I'm literally, as I read this, I'm still skimming these tweets right now, learning more about what it could look like. So that'll be a big topic for later on today and tomorrow, probably on the Eric Ains Show.
In the state of Virginia, they have officially adopted the Virginia plan, which was brought up at the Border Control meeting today, but is not currently under consideration. The Virginia plan bumps all sports back to starting in January. They're going to play basketball and their indoor sports in early January through February, and then go from there with a football season in the middle, and then their spring sports season will begin in late April and will extend all the way through June. So they have taken a radical approach to it, and that's it's very different, but Tennessee not looking at doing that at this point, though it was brought up. I learned that Minor League Baseball is officially out for the year, and while we understand that, it's still a very unfortunate development for a lot of people who rely on the revenue that Minor League Baseball brings in, from players to staff members, and also the development of baseball from top to bottom.
Yeah, it's tough. And, you know, a lot of us listening right now live in minor league towns. I know, you know, our listeners up in the Tri-Cities, I spent two summers up there in Kingsport. I mean, I love calling those Kingsport Mets game. I'm all about it. Bristol Pirates, Elizabethan Twins, John City Cardinals. No Appalachian League baseball this season, and sadly, potentially, maybe not ever again. And it's really sad, but these communities, you know, are going to be charged with trying to help these franchises stay afloat. The big league clubs are going to be charged with trying to help a lot of these teams that need aid step up to the plate, no pun intended, and help out. But Pat O'Connor said yesterday that over half of the minor league teams out there, and keep in mind there's 160 total, but about half of them are going to need aid of some sort to be able to stay afloat. And again, this is from the pandemic, and not having any fans in the stands, because minor league, I mean, minor league baseball, it's you got to get fans in seats. You've got, I mean, it's a show and it's experience. That's how you make your money. You don't make a lot of money on broadcasting deals like Major League Baseball does. So it's unfortunate for sure.
This from Major League Baseball, the Oakland A's, we've mentioned before, are selling their fans cardboard cutouts of themselves to be placed around the stadium. Well, here's a little more on that. If a foul ball hits your cutout during the game, the A's are going to send you the baseball in the mail.
That is cool.
That's funny.
Sign
me
up.
I love it. Hey, if it's only $99, there might be people all over the country that are ready to send their likeness to be in the stands at an Oakland A's game.
Absolutely.
I bet they'll have more cardboard cutouts than they normally have fans.
Ouch.
Is that wrong to say? It's true. Anyway. Coming up tomorrow on the Eric Ains Show, we start our draft of the best players of the 2010s in Tennessee. We are going to draft offense in the 10 o'clock hour. Who's going to get the best quarterback? Who is the best quarterback? That's going to come up tomorrow, and we're going to do a fantasy draft style, so you don't have to select quarterback in the first round. You don't have to select running back in the first round. It's going to be interesting to see how some of us prioritize our various positions.
Hey, Bron, since you and I have the top two picks, I think it would be wise for us to take the top two quarterbacks, because after that,
probably would.
Yep.
I'd like to introduce you to Team Ains starting quarterback Matt Sims.
Have a good rest of your day, man.
Thanks, Kanner. We'll see you tomorrow. This is the Eric Ains Show.
Say we never tried.